Okay, we'll call the order the November 18th, 2020, Town of Curie Beach Planning and Zoning Commission. First item is adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion to adopt the agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Tony?
Aye.
Okay. Next item is adoption of the minutes. Just take a minute and look back on our October 7th regular meeting minutes. Okay, is there a motion to adopt the minutes?
Well, we do have one correction. In members present, I believe Bill Moore was already retired.
I must have copied it. Yep, I'll fix that. Thank you, Kathleen.
And I was a regular member of them, yeah.
Okay, with the recommended change, is there a motion to adopt the minutes?
So moved.
Okay, second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Tony?
Yes, aye.
Okay.
Yes, aye.
Item number four, public comments. Do we have anybody on the phone? Nope. Okay. Hearing none, we'll move to agenda item number five. First one is update on utility conversion with Duke Energy Progress.
We had talked to the gentleman. Can't recall his name from Duke. He had put that off until January. He wants to meet face to face versus doing it with Skype or things. And he thought by January things would be calmed down and that we would be able to meet. I told him this wasn't time sensitive. Tony and I did talk to him on the phone. We had a pretty good conversation, so he's aware of what we're looking at and is kind of eager to talk to us. Tony, you have anything to add?
No, that's pretty much it. I think that he has some thoughts and ideas, and once we can speak to him in January and kind of lay it out, we can have a better plan and idea moving forward.
Right. We told him that we're looking at the cost of doing a section of the town, all the way to doing the whole town, and he said he would not be adverse to giving us that kind of range of what it would do. So, I guess Tony, the other thing was surprising. He said underground lines are no more expensive to maintain than overhead lines. He says it's about a push, which we were wondering about that. Right, Tony? Do I remember that?
Only around 7 days is only underground wire for your having to dig out the driveway or sidewalk. That's the part that you extra expensive. It's a little more time consuming to get repaired stuff, but you have less repair, so it's back and forth.
Yeah. So that's it. We'll let you know in January.
All right, great. Item number 5.2, prohibited use. I haven't done a lot of work on this, obviously, with the election cycle, and I was working that kind of extensively. I did have a question. As I was looking at, you know, I actually maybe a couple weeks ago actually Googled to see if anybody else has done what we're talking about doing. And I couldn't find a single city in the United States that is listing prohibited uses. I got some that were listing prohibited uses in a home business, you know, that you couldn't do certain things in the home business or something like that, but nothing trying to, based upon, you know, our discussion about the court case, try to transform what we have currently into a prohibited use. And I just wonder if, are we trying to make our life too difficult here?
Let me comment, if I may. I don't want to go and dig it up again because it'd be the third or fourth time, but I am certain that the catch-all provision that we have in the ordinance if it isn't on the table of uses, it's prohibited. There's no doubt whatsoever in my mind that that provision is null and void and without effect based on a 2016 state Supreme Court case. I also know for a fact that that was one of the arguments I presented and that the court accepted in my case from about a year and a half ago that invalidated completely Wilmington's short-term rental provisions as they were formulated at that time. I'm also convinced without a shadow of a doubt that based on the language in that 2016 case that I mentioned, that what you prohibited has to be expressly provided for. Next point. Prior to my coming on board with the town in 2014, you had a section in the zoning code, I guess it was chapter 19, still is there today, and we've used it, of prohibited uses.
Yes, we do have prohibited
right.
uses already.
So, so far, so good. The next point I would make is that, and I've mentioned this a couple of times, either in my case and in I've seen it two or three times since, and I'm talking very recently. I've seen reputable, big jurisdictions that ought to know what they're doing that still have not corrected their zoning regulations and still rely on that catch-all voiding prohibiting clause, which is now null and void. And I've always told you all that you were proactive. Now, here's my main point, two main points. You know, one of the first things I learned in law school, which was a surprise, is that America actually has at least 51 bodies of its law that are separate and independent from each other, the federal and each state. So what's happening in North Carolina, zoning code-wise, zoning-wise, in the context that we're talking about, could very well be limited to this state or and no others, or a handful of others, or a majority of others, where staff just hasn't caught up to that reality, but I've not seen references to it outside North Carolina, so it may be a very local issue. But here's the main point, and you've got, when we started on this, I told you all that it would require legal review. We also agreed that it wouldn't make much sense to have a legal review without a list in hand. So the premise that we've been operating under for the past several months is you all were developing the list and then I just stepped in. Well, I've stepped in, I put my big toe in the water this afternoon once I looked at that list, and that's all I put in was my big toe. But I came up with some very useful concepts which I think address your question more than any other, and that is based on a few examples that I put forward in this little memo on your desk. It occurred to me, you know, I got to thinking about prohibiting uses, and it occurred to me the saga of how adult bookstores have survived so many attempts that you couldn't, I don't know the right word, but many, many, many attempts nationwide to ban them, but here they are. They still exist. You cannot ban them. You can restrict them to certain jurisdictions. And I recall and confirmed here, and it's absolutely the same for tattoo parlors, that they are protected under the First Amendment. So you can't ban a tattoo parlor because they, what they're doing is expression and it's protected by the First Amendment, and apparently there's a lot of cases on that. I didn't take the time to check and track them down. That's still left open to me, the question of whether you could ban, for example, a retail operation that by its nature didn't involve artistic expression like a tattoo parlor or topless dancing, which is what they call it, is entertainment and protected by the First Amendment as long as it's not obscene. And so I found two things that I thought, because I've never seen prohibiting uses, I've seen prohibiting uses in districts. except for things like we've done about container housing. And that may be district specific now that I think about it. But I ran into two more concepts which I think address your question. Freedom of speech includes commercial speech. And commercial speech can be defined quite broadly as somebody just setting up a retail operation and advertising their product. But the thing that I found, and I didn't spend any more than 20 minutes on this afternoon, the thing that I found that surprised me the most, but which helped to make sense out of the fact that I did not see other jurisdictions banning uses outright, and that what I saw instead was regulating those red label uses by limiting the districts they can be put in. For example, no closer than 1,000 feet from a residential district, no closer than 1,000 feet to a church, no closer to a residential district, period. Geographical restrictions and district restrictions was all I could find. I couldn't find any jurisdiction banning uses. And it led me to something that, frankly, I wasn't aware of. We all know Article 14 of the U.S. Constitution is the Equal Protection Clause, but apparently, well, not apparently, there, the 14th Amendment has a lot of other language in it. And one of the fundamental rights is the right is freedom of enterprise, meaning that I don't think you can prohibit a vaping shop because that's their enterprise and they would take the position that they have a constitutional right to engage in that enterprise. So I don't think you can prohibit it, but I think you can prohibit what district it falls in. Some of the recent COVID cases, most of which have failed, but some of which have prevailed, and I'm thinking of New Jersey and Michigan, went after, and put aside the politics and the pandemic, one of the fundamental arguments presented by the opponents to those lockdown orders was it denied them the freedom of enterprise. So bottom line is, I don't think you can prohibit some of these uses. I think you can prohibit it where they go and control them through other restrictions. But I think you're going to run into First Amendment and 14th Amendment issues. And frankly, I didn't have time to read through the list. I looked at the first three or four, tattoo, vaping, and adult somewhere was on there. And to me, looking into those things kind of told the story. If it's you're going to run into First Amendment freedom of speech, First Amendment freedom of commercial speech, 14th Amendment freedom of enterprise. So I don't know that you're going to be able to ban. I didn't look at all the uses, but I don't think you're going to be able to ban a lot of those uses in general. But I do think you can ban them where they go. You could ban vaping shops in residential. I'm just making this up because you might approach it under a home industry. But you could ban a vaping shop in a residential district and allow it in a commercial district. Or I'll tell you what another town that I know did once. There was 10 years or so ago, there was a lot of emphasis on wireless towers. As a matter of fact, you all make money off your wireless tower. So there was a push for that because of the economic revenue from leasing space on the tower. At the same time, there was concern in the public sector, I don't want that tower next to me. So what a town that was my client did one time, and they used an engineer, I didn't draft it, we monitored the text amendment process. But they said, okay, fine, you can have a tower. And you can have a tower in these areas. But they did the math and they laid down mathematical distance separation requirements such that it was impossible to put that tower anywhere in town. They said, you can have it. Got to be X feet from this, X feet from that. And if you did the math, there was no way that they could meet all those requirements no matter where they were. Now, I think something like that is open to a challenge by somebody that knows what they're doing, but that was one way to ban it without banning towers per se.
I have an opinion on this, which is not surprising.
You have freedom of speech, so go for it.
I do. I think it's like a lot of things. You don't really know what you don't know until you get into it, right? And I don't think a lot of the places have got the foresight or the proactive view of things that we do. And now that we know, or we've known for a while, that there's a potential issue from this, and our own counsel, Mr. Eldridge, has used this in another jurisdiction, we know there's an issue with this, right? At a fundamental level, we know there's an issue here that we have to deal with.
Constitutional issues.
So now our choice is, do we act on it, knowing what we know, or do we just kind of bury our head in the sand and wait to see what falls out from it? And I think we act on it.
I think there's a third option. Rather than construe the list as banning in general, consider, if you want to be proactive, don't take the whole list. Take some of the more important ones, maybe limit your selection to 6 or 10, but consider prohibiting where they go.
Yes.
Where they can be listed or cited, what districts is what I'm trying to say. And then go back to your prohibited uses and simply say, vacant stores are prohibited in the following districts. I think that works. You haven't precluded the right to engage in that enterprise, but under your police power, as long as you come up with good reasons why, which we may want to reflect in the text amendments if we go this route, you can regulate location, you just can't ban it outright. And I think our prohibited use section allows for that. No vaping shops in this district, this district, this district. Or, and I would take it one step further, probably up at the beginning of that section, council finds that the following uses are yada, 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 and therefore these uses are prohibited as follows.
So I think that's the correct approach. I think we take our top, say, five or six issues, and we address where those can be located within the safe and legal guidelines of not banning them, but prohibiting where
everything in that residential area is
yeah, and we would end up banning it because we only have really one business district.
That's right. Well, you've already got your geographical restriction.
Yeah, right.
So if we ban it from that particular business district and all residential districts,
then we
essentially ban it from the town.
Well, yeah, but what I'm hearing say is that, okay, residential is easier to kind of, you're banning it by zone. When it comes to businesses, you have to provide them the opportunity. So you say, it's permitted in the business district. It has to be 2 feet from a fire hydrant, 4 feet from the ocean, you know, and things like that. So where the location goes.
Couple.
Am I missing, is that closer?
No, I think you're right, but another reality check. Your restrictions can't be, you're still subject, if you avoid banning it in general, and you come up with what you say are reasonable restrictions as to location, you still leave yourself open to a constitutional attack if your geographical, for example, restrictions are arbitrary and capricious, or if somebody sees through them, and, for example, don't put it in residential, don't put it in business, well, heck, where am I going to put it? Therefore, you told me I can't do it altogether.
Well, how about something like this, not in residential? You know, let's say an adult entertainment, but it can't be within 1,000 feet of a church.
Well, yeah, that's the way it is.
But that would probably restrict it from any place in the business district, too.
Yeah.
So by doing something like that, it's not capricious. But it still has the effect of banning it.
Or if it just left a little tiny corner where it was possible that it was never really going to happen.
We already have in the code of ordinances, it's in chapter 15, prohibited uses.
Yes.
And one is already, we already have adult book and video games.
Yes, right.
Is it listed generically as a prohibited use or does it refer you to other
uses? It says uses that are prohibited.
No, read the provision about
adult book and video stores, and then it has various SIC codes following it.
I'm surprised you all. If you get sued on that, you're going to lose.
Yeah, I mean, this is something we went through.
You're the one that helped us put that in the order.
Yeah, I mean, we went through a whole SIC code approach.
Yeah.
You know, which was the standard approach back then until we did this, you know, where we had SIC codes that were allowable uses. We identified prohibited uses. That was the standard model for doing this sort of thing. And now we're kind of mixing this all up. So, no, believe me, I'm quite aware of
that. That may have been appropriate at the time, but it's not appropriate today.
You're absolutely right. That's what
shipping containers, but I don't remember that. I have to go back and
we would have a matrix of SIC codes by districts.
But I think that...
Frankly, I don't like those codes, but that's fine.
Yeah. But again, the point is that may have been appropriate at the time, but with what we know today, that's not appropriate today.
I just think you need... Here's what it comes down to. You could probably restrict your top 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. But you could probably come up with some reasonable restrictions, but I think it requires a comprehensive look at those things and to figure out how you're going to restrict them so you don't fall into some sort of challenge based on arbitrariness.
This, I agree. And this is why I did spend some time. I probably spent a good hour. I'm a firm believer of not reinventing the wheel. Okay, that... If we can find somebody else that has already gone through this effort, that has a large staff and they've dealt with all these
issues.
And I couldn't find any. That's the struggle that I'm having is that, you know, I'm all for doing things correctly, but I can just see us spending a lot of your time, a lot of your effort, and, you know, to try to tweak all the sort of things that we're talking about here. I wish we could just cut and paste what somebody else has already done.
Did you look specifically at restrictions within a residential area?
What I did is I Googled, I probably did 20 different keyword Googles things of prohibited uses by district, you know, and trying to find, and I did find several that would list a number of things for home. They would say, well, but everybody's still using the old term, the old terminology, basically.
And I found a lot of... heavy restrictions on vaping that were very similar to adult bookstores in terms of where they could go, limiting to where they could go and how to fit them in. So
is this something we can ask the one of the professional organizations like
the American Civil
No. But
I can tell you what that's
called. Council of Government.
Yeah, the Council of Government or something like that to help us find if anybody's done this, or do they have any recommendations or templates or anything?
Well, two comments. I do think that Supreme Court case ruling that I told you about creates a huge gray area. How can you prohibit, how do you address things that you think should be prohibited if the catch-all provision no longer works, and if you run into all these constitutional problems on the other end of the extreme. So I do think that ruling, and that's probably why we're not seeing much action on the local level, because it's a difficult ruling to deal with. You say on one hand, okay, our catch-all provision is null and void, it's fair game, let's do something about it, which is what you're trying to do by being proactive, but hey, wait a minute, if we try to do something about it, we run afoul of all these constitutional concerns. So I do think it's a pickle. Perhaps COG or School of Government, I'd be more comfortable going to the School of Government, but I think in either event, you're going to be charged a fee for their assistance.
Okay. Well, then I would suggest that maybe for our December meeting, we pick five of these top ones and figure out how to write it in such a way that it satisfies our requirements.
See, I'm... based on council's discussion of limiting it by zones, and I would rather say, what would you think that you would not want to have initiated in the house next to you?
I got to make one more comment. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, that's all right. That's fine.
I'll forget it again. The other approach, and we discussed this before we settled on a historic district concept for the commercial district. The other approach is to take some of these uses and treat them as requiring a special use permit. And then you can regulate it that way. They have to, but you have to come up with, you know, you can go into the code now and find your special use exceptions and see the additional regulations they have to meet in order to get that special use permit, and then you can put conditions on granting that permit. But that's the other approach. Either way, you're dealing with some time.
Well, but, you know, but there's another point, because we're thinking kind of business zoning here. In residential zoning, the term residential is there for a reason. Okay, it implies that it's not a business zone, that it's a residential zone. Now, in our residential zones, we do allow certain businesses. Okay, that when you look at the residential zones, but we do allow certain businesses within those residential zones, like churches and these type of things. Do we need to kind of address the issue that you're talking about? Do we need to, under a residential zone, identify all the businesses we don't want there? Or by the word residential zone, does that satisfy the requirement if we identify businesses that we do allow?
I think it's, considering everything that we've spoken about, considering all those circumstances, I think it'd be a worthwhile exercise to take the top 5 to 10 things that you're concerned about, review the current code provisions for the district, identify what districts you don't want them in, review the code to make sure you can fit them in, and then if it's a green light, and with some added verbiage, put those uses in the prohibited use section that's being prohibited in those districts.
But again, I still try, and I don't want to beat this to death, but yet again, this is coming back to the issue here. It's a bait and tackle shop. It's not going to be one of my top five, you know, I mean, sort of thing. But if I'm in a residential district, I don't want my next door neighbor putting together a bait and tackle shop, you know, turning their house into a bait and tackle shop. Does that mean that?
I'd have to look at a couple of things. I'd have to look at home industries and also better familiarize myself with your zoning districts, because I'm sure you've got some residential / commercial districts.
We already have on this list, I think in the residential district, we have an existing hair salon, we have an existing person doing auto detailing. Airbnbs are all over the place.
Yeah, certainly.
And we have a woodwork shop that's in the
right. We also have some small manufacturing.
I wouldn't touch short-term rentals with a 10-foot.
Yeah, well, I just saw that one. That would be gone. Yeah.
Okay. So what I would recommend is give. I mean, this is a great discussion, and I would recommend we keep putting this off. But I think that this has been a very good, and I think we all need to kind of look at the zones and see what's actually written in there, and maybe think about. If you could think about the idea, can we have different language for residential versus commercial? Because residential, by its very nature, seems to exclude certain things.
I think you can list prohibited uses in residential areas.
Okay, right. But we could just go down this whole list then.
Yeah.
You know, with what we have here.
That the fact that seems so easy raises a red flag for me. So I think your point is well taken. Let's all of us think about this list. Let's review our districts and see what it looks like, to see if we can proceed along those lines. I'm sure we can to one degree. Whether or not we can take this whole list, like I said, if you come to me and say, look, can I ban a hair salon in every single residential district, I would tell you the following. Let me look at how the code treats that district. Let me look at how the code treats home industry.
Let me look to see if there's anything about that use that's in the special use permit section, and then I'll come back to you.
Okay. All right.
I think it does make sense. Can I add to that too?
We all can do that too. We are the Planning and Zoning Commission, so we should be very familiar with how the Book of Ordinances.
I think that's a great point. If we can all engage in that process to one degree or another, we can continue this useful.
And we did, and John was there. I mean, we did, what, probably 8 years ago, do exactly this, you know, putting together these matrix of uses and all that sort of thing. But we're kind of flipping it now. Rather than allowable uses,
probably
we're now...
But I do understand. I mean, you can say we're going to allow vaping stores, but they're not allowed within 500 feet of a restaurant and 1,000 feet of a school, right? I mean, that says that they're allowed in the town, but in this parcel...
Yeah, we went to go out and measure and find this little 2-square-foot area.
There's going to be an area where it's allowed because they're
going to be surprised if they probably lease out that area and put that shop up there.
So, all right. So anyway,
so we're for next month for that one.
Yeah, it's not. We're not tabling it, but it'll be on next
month.
So we're all coming in with our top five and
top five, and we've all made a commitment to go back and revisit the code. That's I mean, I certainly have looked at that extensively, but probably not in the last couple of years. So
I do believe it's an important topic to continue.
Okay. Very good. All right, last one, land use plan revision. I think I sent out an email to everybody. This would have been a couple of weeks ago. The land use plan, I'm on the land use plan committee. And when you look at the land use plan, when it was done, 12 years ago, 13 years ago or something?
2006.
When was it?
2006.
2006, okay. That, from what I understand, is that the Planning and Zoning Commission acted primarily as the Land Use Planning Committee. That's my understanding. Right, but we didn't have a separate Land Use Plan Committee. The Planning and Zoning kind of acted as that.
You guys reviewed it briefly, and that's...
You're right. And so there was a public, when you read the document, it looked like P&Z held the public hearings and came up with, the people would come in and the whole list of issues were developed by the P&Z. It's actually in the document. It says that was there. So when I read that, I talked to Joseph, who is the chairperson of that, and he thought it'd be a good idea that we discuss the issues that we think might need to be addressed in the land use plan. In addition, when you look at the land use plan, it appears that the Planning and Zoning actually held the public hearings. It's in there someplace. It's fairly early in the document, if you want to look for it. And Joseph said, well, maybe we can do a combination public hearing between the land use plan committee and P&Z, but that should be put off till January or February.
I wonder if that was part of the research that the consulting group did for us, a mailer and a couple of public hearings that were put on by Public Works. I'm pretty sure that's probably what it was.
It says in the document that P&Z did the public hearings. And
what I'm saying is I wonder if that was the intent, just to get the feelers out to find out what the general public wanted the plan to have in it.
Right. But it was, again, I wasn't on P&Z at that particular time. That was 14 years ago. So I came in maybe 10 years ago. But when I read the document, it states that P&Z was pretty actively involved in identifying the issues and holding the public hearings. And it's in the document someplace. I think it's at the front end of the document.
It should be under scope, I would think.
But we do have a land use plan, but it was explained that we didn't have a land use plan committee for the 2006 document. That the P&Z, it was done by a consulting group, but it was more the P&Z was kind of managing that whole process. I don't know if that's true, but that's what was told me. So the the Land Use Plan Committee asked the P&Z, because there is a Land Use Plan Committee, we don't have to take the lead on that. But they did ask us to maybe identify issues that the Land Use Plan Committee should look at when revising the land use plan.
Well, we've already got one we've taken on. Tony and I are looking at, because it was on the 10-year plan before to look at underground utilities, so we're looking at that and trying to come up with costs with that. Roads, our streets, I mean, if somebody on the P&Z wanted to take that and look at what, you know, what it would, I guess what I'm getting at, to have a land use 10-year plan and have no dollars associated with it, it's kind of like, well, I don't know. I kind of look at, if you don't know what it's going to cost, and so you can prioritize what you want to do.
Here you go, there, so. Chairman.
Okay, yeah. What exactly does it say here?
Significant existing and emerging conditions have been identified as follows. Through a dialogue established with the P&Z Commission, through the opportunity to hear citizens through the forum of the Planning and Zoning Commission meetings, and through discussions with town staffs, in conversations with and in conversations with citizens.
Right. So the P&Z took a fairly active role back then. We don't have to take an active role because we have a separate land use plan committee now, which I don't think existed for the 2006 document.
Here are the list of questions, and it's subtitled as this list was created from public comments given at Town of Kerry Beach P&Z Commission meeting.
So your committee is not going to hold like a public
hearing?
No. Sure that's
not unless the Land Use Plan Committee wants us to hold it, but right now they have the authority to hold the public hearings and not us.
They would hold it. It's...
You don't think they have the authority? So we would have to do the public hearings.
An ad hoc committee.
It's an ad hoc committee. So.
So they could provide us the information and we could do it in a public hearing. Okay.
Don't you think we need to decide whether or not it's necessary to have a public hearing first before you talk about who can do it?
Well, the consulting company will come in and so, you know, like advise us on when to do these community events and public hearings.
Right. But it sounds like it sounds like at least from a that the P&Z will be involved if we have to have public hearings in terms of maybe using the P&Z mechanism to be able to hold the public hearing as per what was done in 2006. Okay, so I don't think we need to do anything right now in terms of identifying issues. That was kind of the discussion, but that was before they decided to go ahead and hire the consultant to do this.
They're coming in December to present the council what they can do for us.
Right. Okay, all right. So I don't think we have to do anything right now, but I think just become aware that we may have to get involved because this may be the official structure for doing some of the things that we need to have done, just like it was back then. So, okay. All right, so I think that's all we need to do. If there's any other comments. Is there any other new business that we don't have here? Anybody from the, any commissioners?
No.
Anybody at all? Tony, do you have anything new?
No, I'm good.
Okay. All right. Is there a motion to adjourn? But before we do that, have we agreed upon a meeting time?
No, we haven't.
Okay.
Except for December the 2nd.
December the 2nd. Is there a problem with December the 2nd with anybody?
No.
Everybody's good on that?
Good.
December 2nd. Okay. All right. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Wait. Catherine, we're going to say something.
That we hadn't decided.
Okay.
Thank you,
Andy. All right. Make a motion to adjourn.
Okay. Second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Tony.
Aye.
Okay.
Aye.
Good.